Il-program li ser tisimaw huwa miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM 103.7. I'm Patricia Cavalleri, and in this series we shall be hearing from academics about their research and from students and other members of the campus community about the many activities which will be taking place during the coming year. I'm delighted to have with me today on University Matters on Campus FM, Professor Sandro Caruana. He is the new Dean of the Faculty of Education. So it'll be very interesting to hear his take on what it means to be Dean today. Just a few words about my guest. Sandro Caruana completed a PhD in linguistics, Università degli Studi di Pavia in 2001. As a full professor, head of the Department of Arts and Languages and Education, and, as I said, Dean of the Faculty of Education. He holds courses on Italian language teaching methodology, on social linguistics, on the language of Italian media, and on intercultural communication. His duties also include supervision of students on teaching practice. In 2006-2008, he launched and coordinated a master's course in applied language studies, and in 2013, a master's course in Italian education. Besides language teaching and social linguistics, his main areas of interest include multilingualism, language attitudes, second language acquisition, and the romance element in the Maltese language. He has participated in a number of international projects on intercultural communication and on the teaching of Italian, including the SPICES project, which was the social promotion of intercultural communication expertise and skills, and the Meridian project, multilingualism in Europe as a resource for immigration dialogue initiative amongst the universities of the Mediterranean. Certainly a very interesting and topical subject. He has presented his works in several international conferences and was invited as keynote speaker on a number of occasions. He was recently involved in the organization of the Associazione Italiana di Linguistica Applicata, the annual conference in Malta, and is one of the organizers of the SLI, Società Linguistica Italiana conference in Malta in 2015. His academic contributions have been published in books, referee journals, both locally and internationally, and he lectured in foreign universities where he also supervised and examined PhD students. A warm welcome to the program, Professor Caruana.
Thank you.
Of course, we're all very interested to listen to your take on the faculty, because being a new dean must be a very exciting and challenging position. But perhaps before we go into the faculty, perhaps we could talk a little bit about what you do personally, because obviously from the biography we've got a very good idea of the breadth of things that you study and research and the kind of international contacts that you have. Language acquisition, really, as from your academic point of view, how would you define your interest in that?
I've always had, first and foremost, an interest in languages in general, in Italian in particular, for various reasons, also related to my own personal childhood. And I've always, however, seen myself first and foremost as a teacher. I mean, I'm proud to say that, I mean, I'm a teacher by profession, that ultimately, you know, my own research and my academic career actually developed from the very fact that I originally was a graduate of the Faculty of Education, that I've taught in schools. And in a way, this helped me combine a little bit these two sides of me, my interest in language as a structure in its own right, and in linguistics in particular. And then, of course, how people, how students, how learners acquire and learn languages. So these two sides, you know, put together basically form language acquisition, which has both the linguistic dimension and the way people actually put building blocks, if you like, together in their head in order to learn a language or acquire a language. And whether, because this is also sometimes a question, whether actually languages can be taught effectively, you know, by teachers, and to what extent the input of a teacher can actually help a student, you know, put these building blocks, if you like, together to be able to form a new linguistic system, which of course basically is built on prior linguistic knowledge, which is generally acquired during the phase of literacy, so-called literacy, during the first stages of life. So it's language and schooling, you know, put the two things together, and basically that's what I'm interested in.
When I was young, I was brought up in England, and although my parents were linguists, we were brought up monolingual. So it was English, English, and more English. And then later on, perhaps, you know, schoolroom French. Here in Malta, of course, the situation is slightly different, slightly more complex. So language acquisition here in Malta must raise challenges and interests for somebody like yourself.
Absolutely. I mean, the context is an ideal context in so many ways. I mean, even to study language and language acquisition and language contact. I mean, Maltese in itself, of course, is the result, because of its history and its geographical position, of an extremely interesting and extremely rich, you know, language contact process. And I myself am very interested in the Romance element, Italian element, and Sicilian element in Maltese. But having said that, of course, yes, we do live in a bilingual situation. Now, bilingualism, of course, has different facets and can be also defined, has been defined in many different ways. The fact is that it is a richness. I mean, multilingualism, or plurilingualism from an individual point of view, is a richness. It's an added value to, you know, basically what a monolingual speaker actually possesses. Then, of course, it also depends very much on, well, let's call them language attitudes. That is the way bilingualism is perceived even in society. And to a certain extent, also the way it is used, and to a certain extent, also the way it is judged. What I mean to say is that the coexistence of two languages is a richness, if, you know, the two languages are both valued in their own right. So in our situation, we are lucky enough to be living in a situation that, if exploited, so to say, adequately, can actually see a very healthy cohabitation between English and Maltese. Maltese, of course, is our language. It's the language which gives us our identity and which helps us feel, you know, integrated within our society. And the fact that Maltese has developed so much over the past years is a richness, is a huge richness. But of course we have English, and English also has its role in Malta. Okay, it is part of our colonial past, but it's also extremely important, and it's safeguarding English, if I may use this term, and developing English is extremely important too. So it's a matter of finding a balance between the two languages. Then, of course, there is Italian to a certain extent. Italian was much stronger both historically but also in the recent past. Unfortunately, over the past years, it is very, very clear that especially the younger generations are much less exposed to Italian than they were in the past, and as a consequence of this, the acquisition of Italian here in Malta has declined considerably, especially among the younger generations. Statistics are very clear, especially when it comes even to nowadays school-age children.
I think probably with the coming in of cable television, as opposed to the rye that we had before, was...
Yeah, obviously that was the first sociolinguistic, so to say, change, social change that brought about to a certain extent also what I was explaining before. But it's not only that. I mean, our habits have changed. I mean, nowadays, of course, there is internet, which in the past wasn't there. I mean, the vehicular language which internet basically uses, especially in terms of our uses here in Malta, is English, is mainly English. So it's not only a matter of television viewing, but it's a matter that, I mean, television viewing, especially among the younger generation in general, is very much on the decline. Quite but it's so. The very fact that, of course, there's a different, you know, medium, which is especially internet in this day and age, which clearly has changed our habits, even in terms of language use. I mean, one can also comment on the very fact that, for example, nowadays writing is seen very much and is used very much as a means of immediate communication, because of course, you know, we write on the social media, on Twitter, on Facebook. In the past, this was not even really considered. I mean, we used to have to pick up the phone and speak. So of course, as a result of this, even the way we write has changed. It has a different dimension. So it's not only Italian. In actual fact, Italian has had, of course, has suffered a number of consequences locally because of this, but it's the actual use of language throughout the world which has also changed as a result, of course, of the medium that is being used.
What about the idea that you mentioned briefly before, that languages that you pick up as a child are much more easily absorbed, But then obviously later on in life, if you're learning a language not as a child, then the teacher really becomes incredibly important, and the method used becomes very important. How have things changed recently?
Well, especially in the past, in the literature in the field, there used to be a so-called critical period, or a so-called window of opportunity. These are the terms that used to be used, in the sense that it was seen that, you know, language acquisition at a very young age, especially at a preschool age, was particularly effective and particularly strong, and basically used to also last a lifetime. It's a little bit like riding a bicycle, if you will, you know. You might not ride a bicycle for a number of years, but if you've learned how to ride a bicycle when you are young, you might be a little bit unsteady, but if you do practice, you'll get it back somehow. You know, it comes back to you. This, however, concept has changed over the course of time. Today, in fact, we speak not about a window of opportunity, but windows of opportunity, because, of course, there are different ways and different opportunities to learn languages. And, of course, learning a language is also very much possible during adulthood. Of course, the process does change. It is undeniable that psychologically we are better predisposed to learn languages when we are younger. But very often then, when we are older and we decide to learn a language, we might be more motivated because our reasons for learning the language are more clear. Or they might have an instrumental outcome, in the sense that I want to learn this language. Maybe I want to learn, let's say, German, because I might need it for a job. So really, the processes are extremely, extremely different, extremely diversified. Generally, younger is better, is the term, but older can be faster, especially if the motivation is right. But as you say, in young children acquisition, that is, the very fact of, you know, of having the opportunity to be exposed tends to be particularly useful. When we get older, we do need to have a little bit more guidance, but it is also because we are able to reason more, even about language itself. And the very skills, you know, the very metalinguistic so-called skills, sometimes can help us to come back to the building blocks we were speaking originally, put these building blocks in order with more ease, because we have, you know, a better knowledge of the world, if you like, you know.
So. I learned Italian at 19 through total immersion, pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think total immersion is a pretty ruthless way of sort of learning a language, but it was a good way. I also used books as well. And as you say, as an adult, I was motivated and probably used the books better than perhaps a teenager less motivated would have used them.
That's definitely the case. I mean, the most effective way of learning languages is full immersion. I mean, of course, because it's basically, you know, sink or swim, if you like. But it does work. It does work, which sometimes is one of the reasons why languages are hard to teach, for example, in our local schooling context. Because, you know, students speak among each other in English or in Maltese at school. And when it actually comes to speak in French, in Italian, it's so much harder because you're actually losing the pure communicative language, the pure communicative aspect of a language, which in immersion is absolutely necessary. Once you have to use a language to buy something and somebody is not understanding you, whether you like it or not, you're going to try.
So. You've recently been appointed visiting professor at the Università degli Studi di Cagliari, where you held a course on acquisitional linguistics. So this is obviously a challenge for most European countries, where they're trying to encourage their children to be more linguistically aware and linguistically skilled. And you took with you some of your experiences here to the Università degli Studi di Cagliari.
Yes, obviously. I mean, first of all, it's always very interesting and challenging for me to lecture in Italy. It's always a great opportunity. Of course, in Sardinia, they are generally monolingual, because of course Italian is largely spoken, especially then in the area where Cagliari is situated. Having said that, I mean, they have, of course, their own language, which is Sardo. They have, of course, a variety of dialects. So, in some ways, our own experience of, multilingualism and language contact, you know, was placed a little bit within their own context and led to a number of reflections, even by the students themselves. So this was, of course, the course was also based on a number of theoretical lectures on the background, on aspects related to the literature in the field. But the Maltese context is always a great trump card, if you will, you know, to which can be played, especially overseas, because once you start speaking about it, they are extremely interested in it. People who are studying languages are extremely interested in Maltese and in Malta, and of course the Italians are especially interested when they see Italian words, you know, which suddenly take Maltese or an Arabic plural. So, you know, I always mention, let's say, something like balloon, which becomes blalen, because this very healthy contact between a Romance form, an Italian form, which takes an Arabic plural, for them is absolutely fascinating. So, you know.
It really is, definitely. Time is passing, so I think we better move on a little bit and speak about your new deanship, mm-hmm. for which I congratulate you, and perhaps you could tell us a little bit about the way the Faculty of Education is going to be moving forward, you know, your plan or you and your colleagues' plan for the future.
Definitely. This is definitely, of course, my focus at the moment. I mean, as I said, the other part of me, if you will, is me as an educator. And I mean, I'm a student of the Faculty of Education. I've done my master's in education, and you know, from a student, I became a member of staff, and now I'm also proud to be dean of the faculty. Yes, I'm dean also at a moment where, you know, things are changing. Things are changing for a very specific reason. I mean, in the past, the faculty obviously is always involved in initial teacher education. That, in a way, is the flagship of the faculty, even though, of course, there are also several other projects through which the faculty reaches out to the community. I always stress the fact that we are not a faculty of teaching, but we are a faculty of education, and education, of course, in the wider sense. In terms of initial teacher training, we have always offered a BEd course in recent years and a PGCE course for a number of reasons, some of which are external to the faculty, to which the faculty, I'm proud to say, is reacting, because I feel that the change in this case is extremely healthy. We are moving towards what is called a master's, offering a master's in teaching and learning for initial teacher training, in the sense that we are proposing that from October 2016, neither the BEd nor the PGCE will be offered, and instead a master in teaching and learning will be offered to students who first would have completed a first cycle degree. So just to give you an example, for secondary, if somebody has completed a first degree in English, a three-year degree in English, he will then join the faculty, obviously, in order to become a teacher, and follow a two-year master degree. Now, the reason for this change are, as I said before, are several. First of all, we must keep in mind that in the local scenario, we have a situation where not all of our graduates are finding employment. We are, in terms of teacher training, of course, it's a vocational course. It leads to teaching in schools. And whereas in the past, up to a few years ago, you know, the country needed several teachers in practically all areas, today we are in the opposite situation, whereas even because of the demographic changes.
Demographic changes.
Yes, it's also the demographic changes, but it's also the fact that, I mean, the faculty has served the country in supplying, so to say, a number of teachers who have now taken the role. The market is limited. So, of course, there are a number of areas where teaching jobs are no longer readily available. So offering, if you know... It's not automatic. It might take a number of years. So having two routes into a profession where you know, there's a certain amount of saturation, to a certain extent, has also been something which we ourselves as a faculty have started questioning. And this is the reason why we are, in a way, merging the two routes into one. At the same time, however, we believe that having students who would have already completed a first cycle degree, therefore have also reached a certain maturity, and then who would take 2 years to complete their pedagogical training in line, I must add, with what goes on, first of all, in several European countries, but in line also with what is clearly explained even in the literature in the field, where the pedagogical content which is imparted to students needs a certain amount of time to be absorbed and to be valued and then to be transmitted to students. Let's keep in mind that, then again, that the schooling situation is, to a certain extent, complex. Just think of the, for example, presence of so many migrant learners in our classes, which of course we must include in our practice. So the situation has changed, and that is why the need to respond also to certain changes, and the importance therefore of responding to these changes by offering a course which obviously can serve our schools and of course the country better, even in the way that teachers are actually being formed. we are proud, of course, of our heritage. We are going to build on this. We are obviously using our experience in the BEd and in the BGCE as a basis for what we are going to propose at master's level. But at the same time, we feel that we also need to address concerns in schools which have changed by also reflecting on ourselves and, if necessary, addressing these changes by providing a new course which will address this changing scenario. So in a very, very, very brief manner, if I may, that is the main reason for the change.
I can see the sense in also bringing people in from people who've already done their undergraduate degree in various areas.
Yes.
But you will also have saturation in some areas, but not in others. Mm-hmm. So will there be some preferential treatment in the sense that, you know, if you need more maths teachers, will you be, how will you cope with that situation?
No, I mean, obviously we are, but I mean, this is something that we are addressing very, very clearly with stakeholders. I mean, this change has not come about from one day to the next. We've been working on it for several years. We've also built, I believe, a very, very healthy relationship with stakeholders, including the ministry, including chair schools, including independent schools. We are very, very well aware of what there is out there. And we are also aware of what is going to happen in the next 4 years, because, of course, in the next 4 years, we will be phasing out the BEd, so there will be still a number of teachers which will be supplied. Okay, so we are not envisaging a situation where we are going to have these problems. In a way, we also have to consider that in areas where there is more, where there are more needs for teachers to be employed, you know, in this day and age, it's important to inform students of what there is out there in terms of employability. And it is clear that if we find ourselves in a position where, for example, you might need more teachers in certain areas, we will also use the advantage that we're going to have students who will be following an undergraduate courses, and they can be duly informed.
Exactly.
Look, in this area, we need teachers, you know?
Yes.
So this is the way, of course. So this
situation.
Is the way, this is the way, I mean, that we are planning to go about it. At the same time, in areas which are saturated, of course, we are willing to offer teacher training to whoever wishes to join the specific area, but I think it is only fair that a student is also informed that at the end of a course, there may be issues in order
to choose that, if they want to choose
so
English,
I think,
which perhaps is saturated,
so
they can do it,
so
but
the faculty is being extremely clear in its plans, extremely honest in what we are doing, and obviously at the same time we are trying to also use this opportunity to diversify, because we are a faculty of education, so we also need to be present in schools. Our presence is important also in the continuous professional development of teachers. Maybe we don't have time to speak about this, but this is important too. It's not just initial teacher training, but the faculty's involvement in schools and then in education. At postgraduate level, the faculty has offered several programs in education over the past years. At PhD level, we have several PhD students. And as I said, also in our work within the community, which again can be easily seen through the contribution that several members of staff have given over the years.
Of course, absolutely. No, it's much wider than just teaching the,
exactly,
in the classroom. What about the difference between primary, secondary? How are you looking at that?
Yes, obviously there are differences there. Our aim as far as primary is concerned is to, well, first of all, have a so-called in-house degree, first degree, three-year cycle degree, which will basically deal with those students who are interested in primary education or in early childhood education. So the faculty is planning and is proposing degrees within the Faculty of Education, which will also deal with, well, especially early childhood education and related areas. However, we are not saying that a primary school teacher necessarily has to follow only the courses that our faculty will be offering. We are currently considering the possibility of also seeing whether students who would have followed a three-year undergraduate degree in another faculty, such as the Faculty of Arts and the Faculty of Sciences, and who would have completed studies in areas which are also related to the curriculum, or for example to childhood development, then to follow the MTL. I mean, in a primary school teacher, it is not just a matter of imparting knowledge, which is important, okay? The attitude, the approach to, well, towards the children, of course, towards delivering a message and teaching effectively is extremely important. So what we are proposing is, let us also look at students who might have completed the first cycle degree, who have completed the first cycle degree in other faculties. And if these then, you know, satisfy the criteria in order to enroll in the MTL, why not? Or why not? So, the idea is ultimately to offer a service of quality, which is embedded, of course, in our theory, in pedagogy, and also, of course, related then to the possibility of teaching effectively.
Yes, I'm seeing that you're sort of widening the scope of the faculty in a sense, with regard to who comes into the faculty. It's sort of really opening the doors, shall we, to people who perhaps might not have considered.
Yes, well,
this
I mean,
before.
Yes. Well, it is important for a person who decides to become a teacher to reflect well on the choice. It is a job. I mean, it is well a profession, which requires great skills. And at the end of the day, we strongly believe that, I mean, it is the first, it is extremely fundamental even in the formation. I mean, a teacher affects the life of several students. So becoming a teacher is a complex decision to a profession which carries a great deal of responsibility. We are, of course, yes, willing to consider the best students, because that's what we believe in at the end of the day, in order to take on initial teacher education. At the same time, of course, we cannot, our hands are tied in the sense that, of course, we also must have the opportunity to train them in our schools. So the number, for example, of placements in schools also depends on availability. We cannot accept, for example, just to exaggerate, you know, 100 teachers for Italian, because we wouldn't have where to train them. So yes, we are widening our doors, but of course we also are embedded in a context, because of course a strong part of the new course of the masters will be very much developed through close ties with schools. We've always done that. We've always had teaching practice, but we want to strengthen these ties within schools. So it's the quality, you know, that we are looking for. And also, of course, as I said, this constant collaboration even with the context in which we work in.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Our time has come to an end, unfortunately. Welcome. Thank you so much, Professor Sandro Caruana, for coming to talk to us about the Faculty of Education and also about his own work. Thank you so much.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to University Matters on Campus FM. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye. Il-programm li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġju plilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.